and gentlemen, welcome to the Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM, Canada's only campus-produced radio show that strictly talks hockey. Glad to have you aboard tonight, folks, because this is a big one. If you read the preview off the top on Hockey Blog in Canada today, I wasn't keeping count on anything, and apparently today is season number 9, the start of season number 9 for the Hockey Show, so hence the song that you heard off the top, the old Sesame Street counting song there, the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Probably recognize that if you're a bit of an older Sesame Street watcher. Those things used to be on, you know, for a minute at a time during Sesame Street, kind of breaks between the individual sort of skits they put on there. A lot of cool, interesting information about that, though. For those that don't know, the Pointer Sisters did the singing for that, and they had visuals for every single number except for number 1. So each one had its own sort of thing or whatever. Number 9 obviously referencing baseball because of the number of players on the team, but yeah, it was kind of cool that I found that and got that on there. So there's a little bit of factual information for everybody there if they wanted to know a little bit more about that. But yeah, the pinball number count song is how it's referenced anyway. So I also teased a little bit of news out today that, we're going to have some big news, and I believe this would count as big news. If you read the show preview today, you might have known that there's going to be a new co-host. We have said co-host on the show today, and certainly going to have this person on more often than perhaps anybody else, hence making this person the co-host. She has been on before. I'll give that away. She has been on before. Talked all about her hockey career because she had a fairly impressive hockey career. And since then has returned home and is now embarking on other careers and other opportunities that she has available to her. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to introduce you to our new co-host moving forward until she says she's done with this whole craziness of radio. You know her. I know her. She is a former defender for the McEwen Griffins. Ladies and gentlemen, Jenna Thompson.
Hello.
Hi. How's it going, Jenna?
Good. How are you?
I am good. Are you okay with this whole idea? Are you ready to roll on some of the craziness that we're going to do? As you know, the show goes in different directions sometimes and certainly has a lot of laughter, well, we have serious topics, but we try to have more fun than we set down the investigative journalism ideas. But are you ready to do this? Are you ready to have some fun and certainly to expand some hockey knowledge for the listening audience today and in the future?
Yes, I am so excited. This is going to be so fun.
All right, this is what I want. I mean, in terms of finding somebody who's willing to impose and certainly opine on everything, well, that's what we need here on the Hockey Show. So thanks for joining us. Thanks for being part of this now, Jenna. And certainly, like I said, we'll have a lot more to discuss as the weeks go on here for sure. Today, though, seemed to be a very busy news day when it came to everything hockey. So we'll start in the OHL only because I think this announcement leads into the big first story for us. OHL announced today that training camps will open on November 15th for their team so that they can be prepared for a December 1st start to the OHL season. Now, that's important because, I don't know, just, you know, 25 days, 26 days later, the World Junior Championship will begin in Edmonton, Alberta, in a bubble. All teams will play in a bubble in Edmonton, which means there will be some quarantining going on. But they'll play in front of no fans. What are your thoughts on the World Juniors without fans, considering that that's usually the biggest part and certainly one of the best parts of every World Junior Championship that I've seen?
I mean, it'll definitely be different, but I mean, the NHL seems to be doing all right without fans as well. And I mean, that's a huge part of the NHL too. So it'll definitely be weird, but I think they'll get more TV viewers that way at least. So
true.
Should be good.
I mean, I don't want to compare this because it's an unfair comparison. I know it does really well in Canada because of how well it's promoted and how well that we sort of embrace it as our sort of Christmas tradition for hockey fans anyway. But I mean, you go to Europe and in some European countries, there have been no fans. There have been fans that, you know, 1,000 people at a game max. 30, I think in Sweden last time they had it there, or Finland it was last year, 3,500 people max in some of the, for some of the games in terms of what they were offering. And I mean, they barely had anybody in the arena. I mean, for the teams like US and Canada, and maybe to an extent, Russia, Sweden, this isn't going to matter to them in terms of playing in front of fans or not or whatever, but I mean, certainly it's a head turner for the smaller countries, the countries who aren't as developed when they get into one of these big games. Fans make a huge difference to them. Does this take away an element though for those big teams when it comes to sort of the shell shock that some of these smaller countries see?
Oh, I think we cut out a bit.
Oh. Did you?
Oh,
did
there
you,
we go. There we go.
I was going to say, do you think that there's a bit of the loss of an element of shell shock for the big countries when it comes to playing these smaller countries who maybe aren't used to these sizes of crowds now?
I think so. I think it'll probably make the games a little bit different in a sense, because I know USA and Canada, I mean, they seem to feed off the energy in the arenas, right? Whereas the smaller teams, not smaller teams, that's not what I was saying, the European teams and teams that are used to playing in smaller, or not smaller, quieter areas. It'll be interesting to see how it turns out, just because, again, the US and Canada, like, they're so used to having their fans, even when it is overseas, the amount of like Canadian and American fans there, it's crazy. So I don't know, it'll be interesting.
Yeah, and I mean, I look at those big games, the games against Russia, the games against the Americans, where they're played on like New Year's Eve or whatever. And I mean, yeah, you're right. I mean, there's just like Canada seems to feed off that energy, as do, some of the other teams, depending on where they're playing and stuff. I don't know if it'll be the same. I don't know if it'll feel the same as World Junior without that sort of amazing sort of energy within that arena. I'm sure it'll be just as good hockey. I mean, we're not talking about, a loss of players or anything like that, but certainly that energy in the arena won't be there.
Yeah, I don't know. It'll definitely be interesting. Like I said, I don't know. Because, again, like we both said, they feed off of that. And you can kind of see that as you're watching it, even on TV. Like, the louder it gets, the more into it they seem to get almost. Like, they have something to play for, in a sense, because they have so many people, like, cheering for them and doing whatever. So, I guess we'll see how much it affects them. I'm excited to watch, though. That'll be interesting.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes. The other big announcement that came on the back of that is that basically all other tournaments for the 2020-2021 season are going to be canceled. And that will include all lower division tournaments in the men's under 20, which is the World Junior age group, will be canceled. So all of the Division 1 or the Division 2, all that stuff will be canceled, as well as the 2021 under 18 Women's World Championship and all other tournaments in the under 18 women's category. I don't want to say that the IIHF is playing a double standard, but let's be honest. I mean, if you're going to cancel all the major tournaments for the men, except for the biggest one, why wouldn't you put the under 18 maybe into that bubble after the under 20 men have left?
Yeah, I don't know. So it seems to happen a lot with women's sports, though. I mean, get put on the back burner a lot. I think a lot of it could be money-wise. I don't know. They don't want to it's just cost them more money. I don't know. Not as many people watch it. But at the same time, if you're putting that out there, like, that's a very high level of hockey for girls. And, like, watching it is, like, insane. They are very talented. So, I mean, that would definitely give females, even younger girls, like, a chance to watch something. Everything else is canceled. Why not have them play in their little bubble also,
And that would be the idea, is that simply, following up that big tournament with the next tournament, which would be the under 18 women's world championship, would be fairly easy to do in my mind. If you're going to spend that kind of money to create a bubble anyway, which, again, I guess Edmonton and in terms of their organizing committee has that kind of money, it would make more sense to hold the highest women's sort of junior championship, or the under 18 championship anyway, and not have to worry about, about anything else. Yeah, you can move cities around and figure it out for the following years in terms of where it's going to be held in different cities, different countries. But at least give the women a chance to play.
Yeah, I don't know. It kind of makes me a little angry, but it seems to happen more often than not that, women just take the back burner, and maybe they'll come around and change that before that happens. Because, I mean, even like for girls, like younger girls, it gives them something to look forward to. Like, don't get me wrong, watching the World Juniors and stuff with my family when I was younger was so exciting, but being able to like see females at that age, that level playing on TV is also just like gets you going when you're younger. It makes you want to keep pushing and playing. So well, I don't know,
especially if you know some of the women that are playing as well, like that's kind of the cool part, right? So I mean, I think it's a big miss by the IIHF, but I mean, I don't run the IIHF, and if I did, things might be different. So, big changes elsewhere, as we sort of move forward a little bit here. Big changes elsewhere in that NHL coaching carousel has been very active in the last week or so anyway. Let's start in Calgary, where Jeff Ward will remain as the head coach, losing the interim tag. He was signed to a 2-year deal. Is Jeff Ward the right guy for the job in Calgary, do you think?
I think so. He has a pretty good track record with them the last little bit. So the Flames have a pretty good team as well. So I think he's been doing well with them, and they've been doing well under his leadership. So I think he'll be a pretty good fit for that position.
I tend to agree. I don't think there's any loss there. I think the players responded well when Ward took over after Peters was fired. So that's a good sign. Peter Laviolette moves into Washington. Thoughts on Laviolette joining the Capitals?
I think he'll be pretty good for them. I mean, they have a pretty strong team for the most part, and he seems to have, you know, a pretty good record in coaching and just taking over teams that maybe have some different personalities or different kind of people. He seems to be able to control that and produce quite a few wins, so I think he should be good for them as well.
Yeah, I think that holding that group accountable to a higher standard, much like Barry Trotz did, will be really good for the Capitals and certainly get them back into a winning way, and certainly maybe even 2018, like where they won the Stanley Cup. Manny Malhotra leaves Vancouver, goes to Toronto to join the Maple Leafs as an assistant coach underneath Sheldon Keefe. Malhotra, one of the sort of up-and-coming stars in the NHL when it came to coaching ranks. Personally, I don't know much about his coaching background other than he was, you know, certainly learning on the fly. But it seems like Toronto's going with a much younger coaching staff than what some other NHL clubs are going with.
Yeah, honestly, I don't really, again, I don't know much about him or any of that as well, but sometimes, I don't know, again, I don't know much about him, but I mean, sometimes the younger generations or younger people have a bit of a different outlook on it, which might just be what Toronto needs, like a different outlook on the game, different perspective, maybe could be good for them. But again, I don't really know much about him at all, really.
Right. I mean, like I said, there wasn't a lot of information about his coaching sort of background other than he's been learning on the fly. But the other move, Rocky Thompson, who was interviewed for the coaching position in Washington, will now go to San Jose as an assistant coach underneath Bob Bugner. Rocky Thompson most recently was the head coach of the AHL Chicago Wolves, who are always a good team. So it sounds like Bugner is going to get a fairly decent assistant coach in Rocky Thompson.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll let you take fine. That one there.
That's fine. It's again late breaking on that. The one story I wanted to ask you about, because, I mean, this might be a little bit more, and again, certainly I was reading a little bit more about today. Mike Kitchen, who has coached all over the place, has been in a number of different NHL cities. Mike Kitchen fired from Florida today after there was reports that he kicked a player, or no, I guess not today, but the other day, fired the other day after reports of him kicking a player after a player basically spilled a water bottle on him. Both the player and Kitchen have requested no comment on this. The player that was identified, witnesses have basically backed the player, saying that this happened. After we heard Bill Peters do that in Carolina to a player, and now we've seen Mike Kitchen do it. Is there some significant, and again, you can say no, because I mean, you're not, I don't know if you've ever been, I mean, I know you coached a little bit, but I'm almost certain that kicking a player would never come across as a good thing, but is there maybe some sort of like anger problem that NHL coaches might need to start looking at if they're going to be hired? Because it seems like more and more of these stories are coming out now.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't think there's ever a place for kicking any sort of player at all. I mean, I've only coached a bit, but again, I don't think that's ever come across my mind, no matter how much they might make you, or even at this age, like, they're adults. I mean, yeah, you, if you're coming into that coaching position, you know in advance that you're coaching people sometimes that are almost the same age as you, if not, even then they are adults, and they're going to have their own opinions. They're going to have their own way of doing things, but I don't know. There should be some sort of, I don't know. That's just strange to me that can, like you said, it keeps happening more and more. We're hearing about it more and more often. And that's just, there's got to be some sort of screening process before, because that's something else.
Well, I mean, like I said, I was shocked when they announced that he wasn't coming back to the team. I thought, oh, okay, whatever. He's an experienced assistant coach, has a lot of knowledge, a lot of insight into the game in terms of being around the game for a long time. I was kind of shocked when, and then as the details sort of came out that he, you know, this happened, I was like, this is now two coaches that have been accused of kicking. Like, how often does this happen? And I, again, I'm with you. I don't think it happens often, but I don't know. Like, it seems like these old school coaches that grew up in a different time and certainly played in a different time than current NHL players have a weird way of handing down discipline in some ways.
Yeah, I don't, again, there's just no place for that. I don't know. Even if you did grow up in, like, you know, and it was different for you, and maybe people did do that a lot more back then, but that's so unprofessional. Like, you're in a leadership position, you know what I mean? There's no place for that, no matter how mad you are.
Well, and I mean, just because of water, like, come on now. Like,
yeah. Oops, anyway. I got some water on me.
Whoops, sorry about that. Oh, no, I'm going to kick you in the back. That's fine. General managers is popping up all over the place as well. As it was announced today, Phoenix finally filled their position. Bill Armstrong comes over from the St. Louis Blues. The assistant GM in St. Louis Blues was there for their Stanley Cup win, obviously, last year. Pretty vital in terms of that. But he'll get the big chair in Phoenix. Thoughts on Bill Armstrong joining the Coyotes?
I think it'll be good for them. He has a pretty good track record, even with, like, I know he did a lot of scouting and he was the head scouting guy, I believe. Yeah. But pretty good track record. And I think Arizona or Phoenix, I think they kind of need that now. So they seem to be getting there, but not quite. So I think it'll be good for them. Hopefully someone who has a lot of experience and has been around, not for too long, but enough that he knows what he's doing.
He comes in a little shorthanded. Agreement between the Blues and the Coyotes today, it was announced that they had come to an agreement that Armstrong would not participate in the draft, simply because he had done a lot of work for the Blues prior to getting this opportunity for the draft. So the Blues kind of protecting their own self-interest at that point, which I get. But Arizona starts with the 110th pick overall. They don't have a pick before that.
Yes.
He's not there to make deals and to swing deals. It'll be up to Steve Sullivan, it sounds like. So I don't know. I don't know if you really want to go into a situation sort of, you know, empty-handed and certainly starting off without a lot of good assets that you can build from. But it seems like that's the situation that Armstrong's going to take and going to try and fix. So, I mean, would you want that opportunity if that was you?
I don't know. I mean, I think he's looking at it like as a new opportunity. Maybe he can make some changes and that would be awesome. But like you said, he's coming in a little shorthanded, but I don't know. I don't know if I'd want to do that. And you're kind of, not that he's setting himself up to fail by any means, but maybe he's looking at it as a bigger opportunity that he can make more changes later on, bigger impact overall, just maybe not off the start.
Maybe a year one mulligan, so to speak, in terms of getting that going. Bill Zito takes over in Florida. Bill coming from the Columbus Blue Jackets. Talked a little bit to Elliot Friedman for his 31 Thoughts article today. Feels that Florida's on the right path. Certainly going to make some decisions coming up regarding both payroll and talent that's on the roster. Is Bill Zito a guy, again, not that people have to know a lot about him, but going into a place like Florida where they haven't won a playoff round in 10 years and they have a $10 million goaltender who's eaten up a ton of salary for them. Is that a good situation if you're a first year GM?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't, again, I don't think I would be pretty excited about that, but I don't, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what they're thinking, or maybe, again, maybe he's looking at it as he has some, it'll take some time, but he can get there. I'm not really sure, but not something I would probably get myself into.
Well, I mean, he's coming from Columbus as well. I mean, Columbus, who has shown a fairly good track record anyway, and recognizing and certainly developing talent. I mean, maybe that's their thought process, which I can understand. But it was reported today, and I think this goes to the bigger story, that of all the candidates that were considered in Florida, the one name that that caught everybody's attention was Angela Ruggiero, former U.S. national team player, Angela Ruggiero, as a potential candidate. They wanted to know whether or not she wanted the job, and it sounds like it was on the table. She needed some time to think about it before they opted to go with Zito. But how important would it have been overall, just in terms of the way that sort of women are viewed in the NHL, in your mind, Jenna, how important would it have been for Angela to have taken that job? Because, I mean, that's a pretty upfront job if you're going to get one as a woman.
Yeah, that would have been huge, not just for, I think, could have been good. Again, Florida, like you said, doesn't have a great track record. So she came in there and maybe, you know, stuff started changing, or even they improved even the tiniest. But that would have been huge for women within, like, the hockey world, just showing that, you know what, we can do this too. We know what we're talking about. We watch hockey. We play hockey. We know the rules. But I don't know. I don't know. Did they go with him over her? Or did she decline it? Or
there was no real clear yes or no from what Elliot reported, just that she had, it was on the table. They had asked her, and she needed some time to sort of mull over the idea of being a GM. Mm-hmm. So maybe it was in the process of interviewing and that kind of stuff or whatever. But I mean, I look at it, I mean, like you said, I mean, I look at it and I mean, forget, you know, just knowing stats and knowing players and watching hockey and knowing rules. I mean, it doesn't take, and I hate to say it this way, but it doesn't take a gender to be a GM. I mean, you can be, whether you're a man or a woman, you can manage the team the same way. It's just a matter of, you know, that ridiculous sort of concept. And I know it's not ridiculous to people that are trying to attain it, but the ridiculous concept of trying to earn respect in a male dominated industry for women is like, it's such an outdated concept when you're talking about a smart woman like Ruggiero, who's done so much in the hockey world already, and she's still fairly young.
Yeah, like you said, I think, I don't know, it would have been huge, but again, maybe breaking through that whole concept of being a woman doing that, it does, within the hockey world, women are not definitely, they're held up to the same standard, but when it comes down to it, they're not viewed the same way. So it would have been huge, definitely a huge, huge thing for women, not even just within the NHL, but just women and with hockey in general. Like, she would have set a pretty high standard and a pretty, I don't know, it would have been really awesome, but.
Well, I mean, I look at
I guess.
Yeah, no, I mean, I look at women like Kristen Hagg out in Calgary, who ran the Calgary Inferno for so long and had lots of, you know, lots of corporate sponsors, and everybody seemed to respect the work she's doing, and she's running a great franchise. I mean, the Inferno were. You know, we're constantly a threat in the CWHL. And I go, it doesn't take a man to make good managerial decisions. It just takes a smart mind. And I mean, yeah, I don't understand. I mean, I understand the old boys club, and I disagree with how that's set up. But I think that, you know, having Ruggiero, if she was given the opportunity, or if the Panthers wanted to give her that opportunity, maybe even make her the assistant GM, whatever. But giving her the opportunity to sort of jump in there and really sort of make her mark, I think would set the movement in women and for women getting into the NHL, working at high levels in the NHL, would set it forward by light years at that point, simply because, yeah, Ruggiero's got the chops, she knows what she's doing, and she certainly has the ability to be a good manager.
Yeah, I think it definitely would have paved the way for, like, a lot of other women within the NHL or just the hockey industry or hockey world in general. So that would have been huge, like I said before.
Well, yeah, I mean, like I said, I mean, I'm 100% behind that. But I thought that was some great reporting from Elliot, because, I mean, again, there's just not enough talk about that. So, There were some player moves that came up this week, some questionable moves that came up this week. Eric Staal for Marcus Johansson. Staal going to Buffalo, Johansson going to Minnesota. Not sure why Bill Guerin would pull that trade when it seems to be a downgrade for Minnesota, but thoughts, your thoughts on that move?
Yeah, I don't know. Like you said, it's a bit questionable, I think. I'm not sure what he was thinking, but I think, I mean, Staal will be real good for Buffalo. He has the leadership. He's a pretty great player. So, again, I don't know really what they were thinking, but Buffalo definitely got lucky with that one.
They won that trade for sure. Yeah. Reports that Matt Dumba is on the trade block. It seems that everybody who is in journalism has linked him to Winnipeg at some point because Winnipeg is dying for a right-handed shot. My personal thought is we don't need a Dumba. We need somebody bigger. We have some pretty good puck-moving defensemen, but thoughts on Dumba possibly being available and possibly being linked to the Jets?
I agree with you that we might need someone just a bit. I mean, we don't need another Bufflin per se, but I think we definitely need some size and someone that's not strong. We have some strong players, but we need some, not feistiness. I don't know the word I'm looking for.
Like physical?
Physical, yeah. I think we need someone more. There you go. Thank you. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
I mean, he comes with a fairly. I mean, again, his contract aside, I mean, he comes with a fairly good offensive resume, and that's the thing. And I mean, Dumba can play defense, but I just don't think he's the right guy. Considering we already have a Neil Pionk, considering we already have a Josh Morrissey, considering you know that we have a few guys that can move the puck fairly well, we don't need a third guy that can do that. We just need somebody who can occasionally wander in his own zone and clear a crease or pin a guy against the boards for, you know, for a couple of seconds and cause a turnover. Like I look at it as he would be a great fit if we didn't have a Neil Pionk, but we already do. And that's the thing is that I will take a Pionk over a Dumba right now only because we already got him. We don't need to acquire another one.
He's already got the chemistry going. So why pull in someone else that's going to do essentially the exact same thing when we need some more diversity, I think.
And I mean, don't get me wrong, the right-handed shot would be amazing on the power play. It would be that feed again over to Laine, where it's the forehand feed over to Laine, giving him a better opportunity, whereas Pionk's going on the backhand. But I mean, again, you can find right-handed shots out there for cheaper than what you can get for Dumba, especially considering that he's under contract and you're gonna have to trade for him. So I look at it and I kind of go, not really worth it if you're the Winnipeg Jets, especially when there are other guys out there that are going to be hitting the free agent market, guys like Eric Gustafson, Derek Forbert, guys that are out there who are bigger, who can play a more physical game and certainly still be as offensive as you may need him to play, much like a Matt Dumba.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. We'll see, I guess, but I agree. Like the right, like you said, you can find someone that's not going to cost quite as much that can do the same thing. You throw them out there on a power play for a bit here and there, and you'll get that right-handed shot. There's enough of them. So
Montreal makes a trade for a guy that I like, but I mean, his analytics apparently aren't super great, but a guy that I like simply because of how he played the game. But Montreal traded a fifth round pick to get I totally blanked on his name now.
Yeah, I don't know, this one's all you.
They just traded for the defender anyway. I'm gonna look up his name as I'm sitting here quickly. Joel Edmondson, there we are. Joel Edmondson from Carolina, sorry. So Montreal acquired Joel Edmondson, basically setting up their right side of their D now with a number of players. Victor Mete and Brett Kulak look like maybe the two players that are competing for a roster spot now. Do either of those players maybe interest you if you're the Winnipeg Jets GM, Kevin Schill, playoff right now?
I don't know. That one's on you again.
Okay. personally, Mete would be fun to have, but again, he's a smaller guy. I don't mind Brett Kulak. I thought he played well in the playoffs, but again, a two-week sort of run by Kulak maybe isn't really the small sample size that you want, but I don't know. I thought you could get Edmondson for cheaper than what Montreal's paying him at $4 million or whatever it is, $3.5 million a season for 4 years now. So I don't know, maybe that might be an overpay for what Mark Bergevin wanted to pay, but that's fine as well. Last sort of little deal or little player move, Michael Burden, who the Jets had as a member of the Manitoba Moose last year, Michael Burden has opted to go home to Russia and play for SKA St. Petersburg this season, which is a bit of a question mark, considering that the Jets have all sorts of goaltending questions right now, not knowing what to do with Brossoit, having Eric Comrie on a one-way deal, which means he has to either be put up or waived to go back down to the Moose, and now a hole that's in behind Eric Comrie, as Michael Burden was the guy basically earning a ton of time in the Moose camp. Do you see this as being maybe a problem, or maybe better for Burden in that he can get more ice time with SKA?
I think it might have just been more he's, you know, back at home. He's getting the ice time, but he's also not around, you know, he gets to hang out with his family, do whatever, sure. But he gets to, yeah, like you said, I think probably just more of an ice time thing. Maybe he's just gotten to the point where he's like, enough is enough. I'll go get all the ice time I want back out there, and good enough for him.
Well, I mean, I look at the way that Burden played last year, and I thought that he would be the guy that might be the new backup for Hellebuck. And I would like to see sort of that setup at some point in terms of getting in there and being a guy. But yeah, I just don't know what going home would do. I mean, and I know he can start playing early. The KHL has already started up, so he can get home and he can get, you know, more minutes in than everybody else in terms of playing. I don't know if there's an out in his contract. It seems like nobody has an idea as to what that setup is or whatever. But when you look at the way that Burden played last year, I mean, he was outstanding in terms of the way that he played. He was 20-21-1 in terms of the way that he played, two shutouts or whatever, 289 goals against average and a 910 save percentage. But I look at that and I go, 42 games on a very middling Manitoba Moose team, and he basically put up, you know, a 910 save percentage in 289. He was all right. I mean, he wasn't as good as he was the year before, but he only played 23 games the year before. So I don't know. I look at it and I go, I'm not really in favor of him going home to the KHL. I don't know if that really helps him, but at the same time though, kind of want him to come back as soon as possible.
Yeah. I don't know. It's always strange to me when players, you know, just decide to step down and, you know, move down a level, essentially. Not that it's moving down, but I mean, when you have the opportunity potentially to maybe be the backup for the Jets or to get yourself into the NHL, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what he was really thinking, but maybe I don't know. It's kind of hard to say.
A couple other player moves that are certainly a little bit more closer to home, and I mean, although Burden was close to home with Manitoba. U-Sports saw a couple of players take some professional opportunities. Kennedy Bozek, who played for the Mount Royal Cougars last year, she's off to Austria, where she joined the Lakers Carnton of the EWHL, the European Women's Hockey League. Interesting signing there, is I know that Kennedy was looking for opportunities to play, and certainly going to play pro over in Austria is an opportunity in unto itself. Again, I can ask you because you were there. Did it ever cross your mind? Would you want to go and jump the airplane, jump the ocean and play over there?
Yeah, there's definitely, I mean, I looked into it a bit and I had talked to one team a little bit, but when it came down to it, it was just with everything going on with my family at the time. And I still have a year left of eligibility if I really want to go back and play. So for me, it wasn't the right move. And it is definitely, a lot of those leagues are very, very competitive to get into. Depending, like, if you want to go play for a lower end team, I mean, it's going to cost you quite a bit of money to get out there, and you're probably playing not the greatest level. Whereas if you want to play the higher levels, like, definitely, I think a lot of girls, that's their goal, is to go play even for a year or two out there. It's just a different experience. It's almost a different game.
The other big news was Hannah Clayton Carroll accepting a deal with Göteborg in Sweden for the Swedish, the SDHL, the Swedish Women's League. She is over there now. They're actually already started in the season. We're going to have a couple of updates here in terms of what's happening there. But Hannah Clayton Carroll, who led the Thunderbirds in goals and points last year over in Sweden now, playing against, eventually against her former teammate in Matea Fisher, who's also over there.
That's, I don't know much about, when did the Swedish league start?
This week, actually. They've only played two games, so they started earlier this week and have already got a couple of teams have two games under their belt. Some only have one so far, so.
Okay, that's awesome. I mean, it's always fun to get to play against your former teammates because you have your bonds as a team, but playing against them is definitely one of the coolest experiences ever because even if you know how they play, it's just fun to, I don't know, it's the best, really.
So the season has started. I'm going to update everybody right now on what's happening because there's been a bunch of players that have moved over there, as we said. You may remember, I talked about it earlier this year in terms of both on Hockey Blog in Canada and on this show earlier this season. Girgardens is where Matea Fisher ended up. Matea has played two games. She has no goals yet, so no points yet in terms of the way that she's played. Over in, and I found this one more interesting than anything else because they're playing together. Moto Hockey has two former Canada West players playing on the team. Erica Reeder, obviously former Bison, and now JC Magwood, who played with the Regina Cougars last year. Neither of them have points either, so no points there. The only player that I could find that we usually keep tracking on, Danielle Stone, who played with the University of Saskatchewan way back when. She graduated in 2012-2013. Played two seasons with the Calgary Inferno as well, where she had a couple of good seasons there, and then since has played over in Sweden. She has one goal so far for her team, which is... Where am I missing here? She is a team somewhere here. HV71. So, a couple of players anyway with some points. Jenny Hirakoski, you might recognize that name, the Olympian for Finland. Jenny Hirakoski, she is absolutely crushing competition over there. In two games, she has two goals and four assists, leads the entire league in scoring by 1 point over teammate Michaela Kava, who used to play in the CWHL as well. So Luleå doing extremely well because they have not surrendered a goal in two games. They are 2-0, and they've scored 11 goals and have zero against so far, so they might be the team to beat this year over in the SWHL.
Yeah, it looks like it's a pretty competitive league then this year, hey?
there's a lot of good teams over there right now. Lindsay Post is the second best goalie in the league right now. You might remember her from her University of Alberta days. Lindsay playing for SDE again this year. She is 1-1 so far this season. She lost a 1-0 decision to Linköping's earlier this week, actually, September 12th. And then she beat Girgardens 4-0. So she has her first shutout of the season as well. So she's 1-1 in terms of playing and has a goals against average of 0.50. Congratulations to Lindsay. She has new pads and everything, and she looks fantastic in terms of how everything is being played. Top of the standing so far, Luleå and Linköping is both 2-0, and then Brynäs and SDE are the whole bunch of teams tied at 3 points anyway, but Brynäs is the only other undefeated team right now. They won 7-2 earlier this week over Leksand. So SDHL looks like it's going to be a very good league. If you can find ways to watch that, or certainly you find ways to keep up with that league, I would highly recommend it. I know that we try to do some updates as to where the players are playing that played in Canada West anyway every year on the Bison Hockey program, a hockey broadcast. So we'll have updates as we go through, as we get everything going for that. So there's your update on at least a little bit of women's hockey that's being played right now. The other big move that we should report, is Chloe Marshall, who was on this program earlier this summer, talking about her time at Lethbridge in terms of that program and her experiences there. She's found a new home. If you recall, Chloe has been basically bounced around in her first three seasons, three different teams, three different seasons, two different leagues as she went from the NCAA to Canada West. She was with Saskatchewan in her second season, and then she was with Lethbridge in her third season. She will now suit up for Nipissing in the OUA, the Nipissing Lakers in the OUA, as she moves out there and gets herself set for hockey out there. So, fourth team in her fourth year of hockey.
That's got to be tough, but I mean, good for her to keep going. If you don't feel like you fit somewhere, maybe move on and just, I don't know, good for her for keeping with it and still finding somewhere to play, because that's definitely a hard thing to do, especially within women's hockey. There's not that many spots available. So,
well, and I mean, I'm excited for her, because I mean, again, she was a fantastic guest, and we had some good laughs and good chat with her in terms of her getting everything done for her, or for her chat about her career and everything so far. But I mean, yeah, it is tough. I mean, to move all over the place. I mean, she was with Northland College in the NCAA Division III. Again, she went to Saskatchewan. She was a backup there playing behind Jessica Vance, who legitimately is one of the best goalies in Canada West. And then she was backing up Alicia Anderson in Lethbridge, where, again, she's playing behind one of the best goalies in Canada West. Yeah. And you kind of go, is she ever going to get her chance? Is she ever going to get her breakout in terms of a moment? Well, now she might be able to do it with Nipissing, and certainly she'll have some competition there. But they always have a good program. They always seem to compete. They're always in the mix for that, for those OUA opportunities in terms of going to nationals as well. And I mean, like last year they were a Final Four team. I think, I believe they lost to Toronto before Toronto ended up going to nationals as well. But that's the thing, is that the Lakers are always a good team. And I think that Chloe only makes them better now by having another good goaltending opportunity there for her. So.
Yeah, I've heard nothing but good things about that program as well. So, I mean, it'll be exciting to see how the season goes for her, though, because it's hard. It's hard to be a goalie. Like I said, there's not very many spots available within women's hockey. They'll take 2-3 goalies a team, but even then you could have 2-3 of the best goalies in the whole division. You know what I mean? So you could be the best goalie and maybe still not get that much playing time because there's another goalie that's also one of the best goalies. So.
Well, and that's just it. I mean, I believe the MNF also went out there as well. She was a recruit that was going into Lethbridge, so there's going to be a couple of players going in there. But just taking a quick look at their setup there, Maggie Baxter, I think, and Chantel Sanquist were their two sort of main goalies last year. And, I mean, both of them played extremely well. Maggie is a freshman, so she's got, you know, a ton of time left on her career, whereas Chantel is also a freshman. And you go, couple of freshman goalies, all of a sudden, you know, you got a veteran in there as well now with Danica Ranger was in there as well. She was a junior, but you got four goalies now to sort of, you know, fight through and see if there's going to be an opportunity there for Chloe. But I mean, as a fourth year goalie coming in, she provides a huge wealth of experience, I guess, that maybe the goaltending position didn't have before with you know, the three goalies that they do have. So the other kind of cool thing is that, again, for those that don't know, Nipissing has Darren Turcotte, former NHLer Darren Turcotte, former Winnipeg Jet Darren Turcotte, as an assistant coach out there. So that's always nice to see as well.
Oh, I didn't actually know that.
Yeah, Darren Turcotte. He's contributing to, or excuse me, he's the head coach. I thought he was assistant coach. Sorry, he's the head coach out there, and he's doing a great job out there. Like I said, he's built himself a great program out there. Has a lot of great players that are coming in there. Certainly Nipissing in the North Bay area there making a name for themselves. So good to see her land on her feet. Like I said, it was kind of sad when Lethbridge made that announcement, but players are finding homes and certainly finding their way back to the rink, which is good to see for that. If you're looking for her episode to hear her story, episode 408 of the hockey show. So there you go. That'll give you a little bit more information there for everybody that's looking for it. So good to see all those players doing well. Again, try and catch SDHL action if you can. A lot of great players that are playing there. Olympians, U Sports, All-Stars, that kind of stuff. Speaking of kind of speaking of All-Stars who are playing funny games right now, we talked about this a little bit before the show and certainly kind of shook our heads about it and don't really know what's going on with this. If you missed the news, Lanny McDonald, again, Hall of Famer Lanny McDonald, is being sued by Christy McClellan Day, who is a fairly famous author, works with a lot of, you know, sports people, and certainly has made a great name for herself in the writing world, sports writing world. Lanny McDonald is being sued by Christy McClellan Day because Lanny McDonald won't release the manuscript of the book that Christy wrote with him to the publisher. HarperCollins has basically said, hey man, we paid you. We want the book. McClellan Day has said, the book's written. I'm just waiting on Lanny McDonald to release it. And Lanny keeps saying, not doing it. I want somebody else to write it now. I don't like what's in the book. again, the weirdest story I've ever seen, because it seems like everything that Kirstie McClellan Day did was right. Got approval, got information from Lanny, interviewed a ton of people, got everything going. And now it seems like at the very, you know, the 11th hour, this book is being stopped. honestly, this is the weirdest thing I've ever seen. And I'm not going to lie, Jenna, I mean, we've seen some weird stuff on this show. But from a guy like Lanny McDonald, who has a fairly, fairly well-documented career, this seems like a very weird move by Lanny McDonald.
It's just weird to me because from my understanding, he's been going along the whole time. She's gotten him to review it multiple times that she's been writing it, and he's always agreed with it and been like, yep, that's good. Let's keep going. And now that like they have until, I think I read they have until September 30th to, you know, release the manuscript or whatever to the publishing company. And out of nowhere, he just, no, I don't want to do this anymore. Apparently his wife was taken out of the book at one point. Like, something's weird about it. Like, it's so strange.
Well, and I mean, like I said, I've read a couple of the books, like the Kelly Rudy book that Kirstie McClellan Day wrote with Kelly was fantastic. And I don't disagree that she, you know, she's got a great writing voice and everything like that. But the weird stuff is that, again, and this is what's been reported. I can't verify any of this to be true, but it sounds like it is. Lanny McDonald says that after he watched an episode of The Voice and took a long walk, he decided not to continue with the book.
Yeah, sometimes I watch TV and make radical life decisions too.
But the court documents say that McDonald heard a song on the show on the television show The Voice that included lyrics about losing your money but not losing your soul, and it changed his entire view on the book. And I go, I don't understand this. This is ridiculous. Like, how does this affect you like that? And again, I don't know what's going on through Lanny McDonald's head. I don't know what maybe if he's been burned before with deals that went bad or something. But this seems like a very inexplicable way to end a book deal.
Yeah, I don't, again, there's something really weird about this, and I don't know what happened, or maybe there is something that he didn't agree with. But from my understanding, like, he's been on board with the process the whole time. He's been literally helping her like write it as she went, from my understanding. Again, I don't know, it's just what I read or what's been reported, but it's very strange. I don't know, I just took a long walk and decided that I don't want to do this book that we've been working on for like, I think it was like 2,500 hours or something like that.
Yeah, so. like she said she's put in like 3,000 hours in total while she interviewed more than 50 people. Lanny McDonald's lawyer issued a letter to HarperCollins and to Day on July 20th, apparently, and he has 5 issues of the manuscript. And I'll read these out because these just seem arbitrarily ridiculous. But here are the 5 issues that they highlighted. The subject of the book was to be on his humanitarian activities and charitable work, outside of his hockey career in the book. Well, Lanny McDonald wouldn't have humanitarian activities and charitable work without his hockey career, so that's kind of got to be part of the book, I would think. But
I would think so. And I mean, again, a huge part of your life has been hockey. Like, you're famous, like you said, like, everyone knows who you are through hockey because of hockey, so there's got to be some of that added in there. No one's going to read a book just, well, they might. But, I mean, it's going to get a lot more attention if they have a background of who you are and where you came from kind of deal.
Exactly. I mean, that's kind of, like I said, kind of an important sort of, you know, feature of how you got to where you are. The book, according to the letter, was supposed to be written in the voice of Lanny McDonald, but McClellan Day apparently used words that, quote, Lanny wouldn't ever say, unquote.
Then, like, again, for me, like, then just say, you know what, maybe use these words instead. And again, from my understanding, he's been helping her the whole time, so I don't know how this could happen. But
I agree. Like, usually that's what we do in editing. We rewrite stuff, we change stuff. The editing process is usually a fairly fluid back and forth on that. So according to the letter, quote, the book seeks to over-dramatize and emphasize things for their controversial and shock value, which McDonald says he refuses to accept. Again, I don't know what that means. I don't know what McClellan Day found that needs to be over-dramatized and over-emphasized, but this also sounds like a very arbitrary sort of I guess, an arbitrary sort of refusal to agree to do this.
Yeah, I can't stop laughing because it's just so weird to me. Like, out of nowhere, I don't get it. I really don't.
According to McDonald's letter, Day made a binding verbal agreement to McDonald about his, quote, final say, unquote, which wouldn't actually work considering that Day has a contract to write the book with HarperCollins, and HarperCollins would ultimately be the one to say who gets final say on this. So I don't know where Lanny McDonald comes up with this idea, but hey, if you don't like it, write it yourself then, Lanny.
Yeah, I don't know. From my understanding too, a lot of their agreements were verbal. It wasn't like a contract that was signed. Like, I mean, obviously there had to be some sort of contract to do things, but from my understanding, a lot of it was verbal. So maybe he just misinterpreted, I don't know, and he just changed his mind and is, I don't know. Something's really weird, though.
But like you said, I mean, they went back and forth the entire time during writing this. She kept getting, you know, his approval on stuff. And like, this is the part that, like, again, I don't understand that. It doesn't make any sense to me, but whatever. And then the final issue in the letter, which makes complete, utter nonsense out of this entire, he will not provide consent unless there's a total rewrite by a new author. He wants the entire book rewritten by somebody else.
Which, again, I don't know. It's so weird. I can't wait to see. I think it's going to court soon, though.
According to, let me just,
I think it was this quickly. Month.
Calgary. Yeah, it looks like it's coming up. They don't give it a heard Friday. It'll be heard tomorrow.
Okay, well, we're gonna have to keep an eye on that one.
So the date that was due, this manuscript was due, was March 15th, 2020, so they could have it ready and published and bound and out for the fall season in terms of getting ready for hockey season. Obviously, that date's coming past now. HarperCollins basically came back and said, hey, we need a book, man. Like, what's going on? Like, we need to get this done. They issued a 90-day deadline on June 16th saying, we want the manuscript or else, and now they're going to court over it, so...
I can't wait to see what comes out of this tomorrow.
Like I said, this is the most bizarre thing I've ever read. So I'm
details.
over a book. And this is the thing. Like, if you don't like it, how did it get this far in the process? If you were constantly. I don't know. It makes no sense to me. Like I said, I am shocked that it's at this point, and I have no idea what's going through anybody's head at this point, but
I still just can't get over the fact that he's like, yeah, I watched an episode of The Voice and took a long walk, and you know what, I don't want to do this anymore. Like, come on, buddy.
Well, I mean, I get the idea that, you know, if you're in terms of, you know, his idea of selling his soul, I get that if there's stuff in there you don't like, but again, go back and rewrite it then. Just, I don't want this part in there. And his wife, just reading a little bit more about his wife, was the one who requested that she not be part of the story.
Yeah.
Which makes me question.
There has to be something in there. Maybe there's something in there that he doesn't want to expose. But again, he's had however long he's been writing it with her. So
right. I don't. Like I said, I am baffled by this. I mean, if there's a way to get your hands on this manuscript, now would be the time to see it. Because
yeah, we gotta see what we can do.
I have a feeling that if this book ever gets released, it's not gonna look the same as what it does right now. So
yeah.
One last sort of thing that for today, because I know we're running out of time. We've got a few minutes left here. I don't know if you saw this. CCM got approval from the NHL now, and this might be something that perks your interest with the equipment side of it. CCM got approval by the NHL to start producing all of their helmets, or a pile of new helmets anyway, via 3D printing.
Oh.
What they're going to do is map each player's head using their patented software to do so, much like they do for football helmets, so that the actual hockey helmets fit better to players' heads. And then they basically build it out of the interwoven, so it looks like almost like a honeycomb, but the interwoven sort of 3D printing, and then the shell goes over top of it.
Oh, that's cool. I like that.
Again, I was
players, but also 3D printing seems a little I don't know, not secure in a way, but I mean.
I mean, it's all made out. I guess it's all made out of the carbon fiber and everything, or whatever, in terms of everything that's going on. But the company that's working on it is a company called Carbon, who is a 3D printer manufacturer. And CCM, they basically came up and they're producing the hockey helmet liners using that now, using what's called the Carbon's proprietary digital light synthesis resin process, which will digitally print a lattice structure on the inner lining to deliver better breathability, comfort, and protection, and can be customized to fit the athlete's head using precise 3D scans. So I'm not going to say this is going to solve the problem when it comes to you know, head injuries and to concussions, because obviously any brain sort of trauma is going to cause a concussion. But having a better helmet that fits better might be a good way to start fixing some of the problems in terms of not having sort of one size fits all for everybody.
Yeah, that's kind of cool, actually. I mean, especially because concussions are starting to become a lot more, not even severe, but a lot more like looked into, and like realizing like what they actually cause in the long run or how they might affect people. I think that's kind of a good idea, especially in the NHL, where you have that high contact, the fast, hard hits, the all of that. So I don't know. That'll be interesting to see, though, if it actually does maybe make that much of a difference.
So the SuperTax X with Nest, which stands for Next Evolution Sense Technology, is the product that CCM is producing with that. Just to give you an idea as well, the lattice geometry is based on desired performance criteria and weight as input. Its primary function is to efficiently absorb and dissipate impact energy during a game. For those that might want to see it in action, Seth Jones wore it in the playoffs against Tampa Bay in the first round.
Okay.
So he's kind of, I guess he was kind of the test driver for it. That included the 65-minute, 6-second night that they played in the 5 overtime game. So
That was crazy. He didn't even look out of breath.
Well, I mean, maybe it's because it's a breathable helmet. He wasn't very hot, right? So. Well, that'll do it for your first show then as the co-host here, as we are basically out of time here. How'd it go? Are you going to come back, do it again, Jenna? You want to be in on this for full time now?
I guess so. I'm just kidding, of course. It was really fun.
Awesome. Jenna, I always have a good time talking to you, and certainly I'm glad that you're getting on board with this. No sense in delaying the inevitable. We'll be back in the studio when we can get there. I don't know when that will be. It sounds like it might not be till January, but we will get together at some point and do it, you know, a liver version where you and I are in the same room, and that we'll see how it goes. Until that time though, Jenna, I'll let you get going here today. Certainly let everybody else get going as well. Thanks for joining us here on the hockey show here tonight, folks. Make sure if you can tune into any of the hockey that we were talking about today, especially the SDHL, a lot of women doing a lot of good work over there. But until that time, folks, we will see you next week. Stay tuned for Free Range Radio coming up next here on 101.5 UMFM.